send out invites. Evidently, none of my friends liked the show. So Facebook was telling
like
me.
The page.
Right.
Power,
so
power.
So come get the schooling in. Apply our pressure, we answer the questions like how do we get out this low estate? We let the script prophesy, we bringing the Bible to life so that you relate. The world thinks we're rejects, but that word we reject. Watch and we'll show you precept upon precept, line upon line. The script say we're the greatest, and they can't debate it. Salvation is only for the blacks, Hispanics, and natives.
Shalom, shalom. Welcome to the Power Hour Plus Edition. I'm Captain Yahshua.
Shalom. Good evening, Captain Apart.
Shalom. Most High Christ Blessed, Soldier Eric.
So we are back for another episode. All praise to the Most High, allowing us to continue to have this platform. Who knows how much longer? No, man. I see. They don't like what we're doing, man. We saw at conference the number of posts and penetration that we've put out as a body collectively over the past year, and it's like on par with like what people pay for advertising, and we just got it baked in because we got people in the body that, you know, like we were kind of talking about before the show, that do share. Imagine if everybody shared everything, how much more penetration we had. But they're definitely the dragon is wroth. They see the penetration of this stuff going out. They will continue to try to find avenues to restrict our content. Hey, we've had some of you in the audience who's told us that, you know, especially with Facebook more than anything else, how you have not been able to watch or share. Sometimes you can't watch it live. You got to wait, so on and so forth. So none of this stuff is coincidence. We knew this type of stuff would happen. And, you know, we will continue to share and put these shows out. And, you know, there's things always going on in the background. We're trying to think a few steps ahead to make sure that we're able to continue not just, you know, our show, obviously, but all the different content that we have for Israel United in Christ to make sure it goes out. So we are going to continue. Last time that I was hosting the show, we were talking about the Dominican Republic. We left off on some stuff there. This week we'll be going into the book, The Harvest of Empire, which we saw the documentary clip last week on. We went through some things on the internet showing some aspects of it. We will start off, after we go into the inventors and stuff, reading a little bit about Trujillo, which was the United States man in DR, much like we had the brother in Cuba, who was also the United States man, as far as that goes. And then we're going to shift a little bit of the dynamics of, again, the impact of what their meddling in those regions brings about, right? And it drives migration. Again, I referenced when we were going over the documentary, we were talking about the sister from Guatemala. She says, everybody presumes that there's a reason why we come here. And she said, they have no idea why we come to the United States. They think that we don't, that our countries are, you know, undesirable for us. It's not that. It's the conditions and the environment that were created by the United States involvement in there, created conditions where they basically have no choice but to come to the United States to try to make a living and do better for themselves. So, so we'll continue to talk about that too. Is that the sister? We're going to talk about the inventor. I'm still sharing some links here. You want to do the number and stuff, Cap, while I finish sharing these links?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, to our loyal viewers and listeners. Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate you. Like, share, comment, subscribe. Help us get to 10K subscribers. Also, the call-in number with questions or comments is 516-531-9797. 516-531-9797. Yeah, and for our first-time viewers, our first-timers, welcome, welcome, welcome. You're in for a treat. You're in for some edification on the history of the blacks, Hispanics, and Native Americans.
That's right.
Falsely so-called, because we're the Jews, the Israelites, according to the Bible.
That's right.
That's right. That's right.
You got the caller number. Hey, and also, let's not forget the Booster Club, all right?
Oh, yeah.
That's so important that we bring out the Booster Club, iuic.fundraising@israelunite.org. It's up there in the little highlighted box on your screen, iuic.fundraising@israelunite.org. That's the PayPal that you would use to send funds for the Booster Club, all right? I know we're planning some more trips. It's been difficult with this so-called pandemic and different restrictions going on, but we're continuing to monitor and see where there's opportunities for us to get out and continue to preach this word. You know, just when you thought things were dying down, they're coming up with, I think now they have a Mu variant.
Yeah, it's already in 49 states, according to the news media. Because
they had Lambda, right? And now they've jumped to, Mu.
Well, actually, right, they had Delta, and somehow they jumped all the way to Lambda.
Right.
And now Mu. What happened to everything in between?
Yeah, so what they were saying is that the other ones were not of interest.
So they pick and choose the disease that they want.
So EFG, HIJ, K were not significant enough for them to look at.
Well, guess what? If everything is significant enough, right? Why are they taking their time to do all this stuff, right? When you're in an actual pandemic, you rush to do stuff.
It's such a joke. It don't make sense.
Not saying nothing. There's nothing out. I'm not saying that. There's something out there.
Oh, there is something out
without
there.
Without a doubt.
There's something out there.
Yeah, it's on the wing. But they just, it's, anyway, I digress.
Yeah, yeah. But, right.
Bringing the nerves, Lambda, Lambda, Lambda.
Lambda, Lambda, Lambda.
LeVar with the flexible javelin.
With the javelin.
He won that thing for them.
Now they want to make me go back and see that again, Revenge of the Nerds. I do remember the Revenge of the Nerds movies. Lambda, Lambda, Lambda.
He won the contest for them.
He did one with the javelin
With
throw,
the flexible javelin. Right? It was rubber with the rubber.
Hey, don't be surprised they don't show that movie no more because they're saying they're making fun of gay people.
What? Come on, man.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it's ridiculous. All right, so we're going to highlight our Northern Kingdom inventor, all right?
Bring it out!
So, Northern Kingdom inventor, as the only... Oh, there we go. Maria Gonzalez. Okay, that's real. It's stereotypical. Okay, Maria Gonzalez. I've known
Sounds
several,
like somebody I know.
Me too.
Which one?
Yeah, which one is this? As the only woman inventor on this list, Dr. Maria del Socorro Flores Gonzalez, maybe she's related on mom's side, Willow, won the MEX W2 2006 award, so this is a recent invention, for her work on diagnostic method for invasive, medical people, I may say this wrong, amebiasis. It's a parasitic parasite that's... prevalent in tropical regions, especially in poorer countries. So Maria Gonzalez processes to diagnose invasive amebiasis, a parasitic disease that kills over 100,000 people each year in these tropical climates. What is?
The only difference here is you'll see this.
What's that?
Extra loop down here.
Is it you?
Oh, it is.
Was that how to tie your shoelace? How to tie a tie?
Well, do we need to talk? Do we have a conversation for everything already?
Is that how to tie a bow tie? Yeah, did Nation of Islam get you, bro? I'm going to see you in a suit and a bow tie, giving out the final call.
Come on, man.
Left over right?
On Camelback? By the 17th?
Is that you?
I think it is.
It was...
It's these sweats, man. They came with one string.
Okay, you can send me the link. I'll watch it later.
What the hell?
Let me guess. That's an Android phone.
It is.
And let me guess. It was how to tie the shorts.
It was.
Sweat you got on now.
Yes, sir. I've never seen that thing before.
The internet got everything, man. That's a, go up there. How to paint my house. Whole thing up there, you know. They got everything out there. That was funny. I was like, where's that coming from?
Hey, they got something how to lower your volume to it.
You got to get the video on. How to make sure the instructional video don't play during the radio show.
Right.
We need that video.
It wasn't even playing. I don't know where it came from.
Man, someone said bean pies. Damn. They clowning you. I'm sorry. You got me out there with me. He said, tie the loop through the other loop. Put it over. I said, what is this?
TMI, man. TMI.
Oh, man. It's good to be back on the show. It's good to be back on the show. So, yes, you have the picture of Maria Gonzalez up. You want to show her again? Yes, that's Maria Gonzalez. The sister patented and found a way to diagnose because they need to know with parasitic diseases which parasite it is so that they can treat it properly so that it can be effective. So all praise to the Most High. And I'm sure Esau ran with that and did all types of
stuff. Hey, I swear they be booting people off, man.
Yeah. Oh, you know the numbers are deflated.
Yeah.
You can't. They play with that too much. They play with that too much. Right. Because you see the numbers drop and everything.
Yeah, it don't
right?
make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you can only have so much bad internet. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's not that. It's that. It's they mess with the numbers, man. They mess with the numbers big time. And even the views. We were talking about that at conference. The views are artificially deflated for us. They are actually a lot higher. Anything IUIC, they're actually a lot higher than what they show.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah,
without
they're a lot
doubt,
higher.
Because if you catch it before they get to it, you see the numbers.
Yeah, we've seen it. There's been screenshots, and then it shows you later. And then they try to explain it away, but it doesn't make sense with what they say, why that stuff is deflated. So, yep. All right. So, you know, a lot of people, yes, amoebiasis. Mediation. Man, that sound like...
You're going to be aces.
Sounds like how to tie your lace.
That sounds like the knot you had to do to keep them shorts up.
Lordy, lordy, lordy. I ain't never seen nothing like that, man.
And he didn't even realize it was him at first. A new phone, huh?
No, I had it for a while. I don't know what the hell was on that thing, man.
And brother said, get your hand out my pocket, brother.
Oh, man. So last time I had spoke, I often speak about how most of America thinks Spanish, Latino, Latin people, all Mexican. They're all Mexican. And Dominican, I would gander to say, even more so than Puerto Rican in some circles, is a more obscure Latin race to most people. And I would say if you were not in that Northeast corridor, tri-state area, you probably didn't even know what a Dominican was until you came into this truth. You probably saw that camp sign and said, what the hell is a... The hell is a Peruvian?
Hey, back in the days, I had a friend that he didn't know he was Dominican, but his name was Plátano.
Boom, boom.
No, I'm serious.
That was his birth name?
I don't know if that was his birth name. That's what
that
we called
him. That was his
nickname. But he would always say he was Puerto Rican until years later.
I'm going to be a little stereotypical here. It wouldn't surprise me with the way Dominicans name their kids.
You know, want to know what I think first?
Vladimir.
Yeah.
Rodimus.
Yeah, yeah. And they spell it all wrong.
Right.
They spell it wrong.
Right. So yeah. They'll make up a name.
That was from Juice, right? From Juice?
Jubaleski. No, Nate. Simeon, Dominicans. I'm not going to say Simeon, because Simeon means you're repentant and you're away from that food. Dominicans love Russian names for their kids for some reason.
Wow.
And like, made-up names. Like, it sounds like a burp combined with whatever.
Like
what the hell does his name mean?
It's like how they name Moab. They take a pot and throw it down the street. And it's like, ping, chong, ping, chong.
Careful, careful. We might get shut down for that one. You might get shut down for that one. They'll let us talk about Dominicans all day. They're not going to let us talk about Moab.
Yeah, because
Moab.
They're a minority too, right?
Yep. Exactly. Anyway, listen. My wife is Simeon. All right. I have a lot of experience with Simeon. Actually, we're going to read today how Ephraim has a lot of experience with Simeon going into that Northeast corridor, all right? And it's all love, but it's the truth. It's the truth. They be making some names. Hey, interestingly enough, we found out that my wife's given name at birth is actually a Hebrew name. Yeah, yeah. So she just changed the spelling around a little bit so that it reflects the Hebrew versus the regular spelling. But a lot of people don't know who Dominicans are, what they are, and a lot of the other so-called Latin races, which are the Northern Kingdom tribes. So hence why we're going to finish up with Trujillo. That's what I'm going to start with. We're going to read a little bit of history about Trujillo. And then we're going to segue away from that, and we're going to go into a little history of Dominican Republic as far as their migration into the United States, understanding that it was driven largely by the events that transpired around Trujillo. So to recap, if you haven't watched, I will go back a couple shows, and you'll see how the United States occupied the Dominican Republic two times in the 1900s, one time in the early 1900s and then another in the mid, all right? And, you know, we were talking about how a lot of it stems from the School of the Americas and all their involvement and very much Monroe Doctrine driven in how they approach the region, right? Their pomp has put them in a frame of mind that they believe they're the superior people in the Western Hemisphere, really in the whole world. And they wanted to make sure that they police the Western Hemisphere. So they're very interested in what's always going on. And a lot of it really in the, we spoke about the Banana Wars, was agriculturally driven, all right? They were still of the mindset coming out of the abolition of slavery of how do they maintain the agriculture and the exports of things like sugar, bananas, tobacco, coffee, things like that, which really at the time were not things you really found anywhere in Europe. Right now, maybe, you know, they kind of bring trees over, they create the environments to try to grow these things. But I've never heard of no English coffee, right? They do tea, the Brits, they do tea, right? They don't grow English coffee, right? You don't hear of, pineapples in Germany. Right. They're known for distinct things.
Or so, plátanos.
Or plátanos. Right. Like, you know what that is? That's like there was always a peanut, a Judah girl or guy called Peanut. That was the nickname. Did you know Peanut?
A boatload of them.
Right. There was always a peanut. I must have known like 10 peanuts in my life growing up. So plátano would be, I guess, the nickname for that guy that you knew that he didn't know he was Dominican.
Yo, he had the fro, he was dark-skinned, the whole thing, man. But you remember, you know what it was? You probably don't remember this, but 70s, 80s, you didn't want to be known as Dominican because you were considered that you got here on a banana boat, so to speak. You were considered an immigrant.
Yeah, yeah.
So he blended in with Puerto Rican. He always said he was Puerto Rican. That was the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, well, hey, you're going to love some of the stuff we're going to bring out today. I learned some things about the large migration of Simeon that went to Puerto Rico and stayed in Puerto Rico. So some Ephraim might be Simeon. Some Simeon might
Ephraim. That's true.
How most of the people here confused them with Puerto Ricans initially in New York. And the darker skinned ones, many people thought they were just black people that spoke Spanish. So we're going to talk about all of that. We're going to talk about all of that today, Lord's will. All right. So it's important that we know this stuff so that we're able to really see curses. Shades of it is throughout all this stuff. And it's very easy to bring it out. Is that the other church? I'm hearing the background noise. It wasn't even on before we started the show. Do they know what time we start the show?
Dude, they're here when we're recording, when we're rehearsing, when we're doing a radio show.
That with you to make some names, we definitely family. Oh, for sure. And I tell you again, Cap and I always tell y'all, it's very different for in the tri-state area than it was in our experience in traveling the rest of the country. And so to me, it's real obvious that Southern and Northern Kingdom are family, you know, because of the way we grew up, you know. Our neighbors, our best friends were Benjamin, Levi, and Judah.
Hey, Cap, you know what's heavy about what you just said there? Again, we brought this out before. That's why the truth had to start in New York.
Yeah, yeah, like as far as the epicenter
there. Because the other tribes had to see
the connection.
Yeah, and they have to see that unity there first.
And the internet has a most has a mastermind.
Yeah, because can you imagine how much hard? Because it's still hard with a lot of Southern Kingdom. Hey, and even Northern Kingdom, but it's a lot of Southern Kingdom vexing, right? Northern Kingdom. Can you imagine without that? Like how much harder it would have been. So, you know, to show that level of unity and stuff like that there, you know. Oh, yeah, Howard Shaibai knows what's up when I'm talking about Simeon. he knows the deal. He knows the deal.
He's Simeon from New York. Too,
yeah,
so
he's Simeon from New York. So he knows what's up. He knows what's up. All right, so let's pull up the thing on Trujillo, right? Someone said that on YouTube when our class or IUIC class is done, another camp pops up right after that.
Yeah, to corrupt.
Yeah, right. All right, so we left off with Trujillo, right? And, gosh, was it Balaguer was the one before Castro?
Bautista.
Bautista,
was
okay.
Before Castro.
Yeah.
He overthrew Bautista.
He overthrew
Balaguer, I think, was before. He was from, what have we covered so far? Cuba?
No, Balaguer was Guatemala, right?
Was it? I don't know. I remember the name, but it was definitely.
But we've been like on the show. We've been traveling the world, bro.
I'm jet lagged.
Yeah, we've been traveling the world on the show. And there's so many other topics I want to bring out, but this stuff to me, every time as I read this stuff, to me, it's I can't do it from the perspective of the assumption that everybody else knows.
Nah, you can't because a lot of people don't know.
They don't know, and they don't know.
I'm a history buff, and I don't know some of the stuff you brought up.
Right. Well, I mean, it's just research, right? And then, hey, if some of the stuff falls in my lap, I just happen to look for something of interest. Like I'm going to show you today. We're going to talk very briefly. They weren't as influential as the Young Lords were, but and history will tell you they were largely Puerto Rican. But you understand that goes because of the confusion of both of them being in New York. There was a group, el Comité, that was modeled after the Young Lords. And it was a Dominican group.
I didn't even know.
It was a Dominican group. Yes. Yes.
Wow.
But when we read about it, they're gonna talk largely about a Puerto Rican because what happened was the Dominicans started it and then the Puerto Ricans joined them in it. And at the time it was very centralized, but they inspired other people throughout the nation to try to battle against the gentrification that was going on in New York. But we'll talk about that too, Lord's will. We have time on the show. But I want to read a little bit more about the history of Trujillo because we saw him in the show. We kind of glazed over him a little bit in the reading because you can't understate how impactful this guy was for Dominican history and not in a great way. And it's relevant because it goes to show you first of all, the depths, right? Because the easy answer is people come and they say, well, Trujillo probably wasn't our people. Well, we can't make that excuse for all the dictators and all the graduates of the School of the America and just toss it onto what they must have been Esau. No, like Cap brings out that there was a lot of ungodly wretches in Israel that were traitors, that were treacherous, right? Korah. All right, you have Jason.
Yeah, Alchemist, the one I wanted to be high priest.
Yes.
And he went against his own people.
Yep. Even on a smaller scale, the dudes that the spirits beat the crap out of them, the vagabond Jews.
They don't even mention their names. You notice
that? No.
They just said it with these two men.
Right. So letting you know that there is precedent in the Bible. Wait, what? What was that? Say that one again. What was that?
Hell no.
What?
Sound like Sol Dereza.
I don't know what he
did. Hell no.
Hell no. Oh, hell no.
there's a lot of precedent of wretches amongst Israel, right? Treacherous brothers and sisters that have been against their own people. So we can't just always say, oh, they must have not been. And it's a cautionary tale to how easy the influence of the crafty council of these powers that be, starting with Esau, who the world ignorantly calls the white man. Primarily, we're dealing with the United States because that's the world power in the world for the past 200 plus years, right? And that's if you're going with United States, right? Obviously, they're extensions of Rome and Britain and all of that because they're all European, right? So we're going to talk about Trujillo here, right? So Rafael Leonidas Trujillo Molina, he was nicknamed El Jefe. So we read, I think, some of this last time, right? Let me see there was, it looked like there was some updated information. All right, I'll just read it for reference again. So they call him El Jefe, which was the chief or the boss. He was a Dominican dictator who ruled the Dominican Republic from February 1930 until his assassination in May 1961. So over 30 years, all right, he ruled. They never called him a communist, even though he was a dictator. They never called him a communist.
He was their boy.
Right, because he was their boy until he wasn't, as is the case with a lot of these leaders that we've been covering. So he served as president from 1930 to 1938 and again from 1942 to 1952, ruling for the rest of the time as an unelected military strongman under figurehead presidents. His 31 years in power to Dominicans, known as the Trujillo era, are considered one of the bloodiest eras ever in the Americas. So this guy was one of the worst out of all the people that we've covered. All right. I believe they teach about him in the Dominican schools. It's like he's very relevant historically. He's considered one of the bloodiest eras ever in the Americas, as well as a time of personality cult when monuments to Trujillo were in abundance. Trujillo and his regime were responsible for many deaths, including between 12,000 and 30,000 Haitians in the infamous Parsley Massacre. I think, was that one of the links I had from last week?
I think so. It doesn't sound familiar.
Well, let's look at it real briefly. Because I remember I was going to talk about, and it'll probably be in his bio, because one of the takeaways I want to get from here is he was the one that inspired that hatred of Haitians. That still stays in the culture to this day down there.
I think they mentioned that on the documentary.
Right. And I read it too somewhere. So it says the Parsley Massacre, right? El Corte, the cutting, in Creole, Kuto Kutoa. I gotta ask Lava or Deacon Malachi if I said that all right. Was a mass killing of Haitians living in the Dominican Republic's northwestern frontier and in certain parts of the contiguous Cibao region in October 1937. Dominican army troops came from different areas of the country and carried out the massacre under orders of the Dominican dictator Rafael Trujillo. As a result of the massacre, virtually the entire Haitian population in the Dominican frontier was either killed or forced to flee across the borders. So this was a major act of genocide, right? I know we read in the scriptures and it talks about instruments of cruelty on their habitations. That primarily is going into the voodoo and things like that. But it also talks about how what they did when they circumcised these dudes that violated Dinah, right? And then they went in and massacred them. So it shows you that the spirit is in them there, but then they wound up using it against each other, all right, when you read that prophecy, okay? As a matter of fact, let's read that in Genesis 49 because, again, assuming – right, we don't want to assume that everybody knows. I know we have a base of repenting believers already that watch, but you know the aim is that this show goes out.
You want me to read it?
Go ahead, bring that out.
This is the book of Genesis, chapter 49 and verse 5. Simeon and Levi are brethren.
Right. So, start at verse 1.
This is the book of Genesis, chapter 49 and verse 1. And Jacob called unto his sons and said, gather yourselves together that I may tell you that which may befall you in the last days.
So two things I want to get out of this, right? He's letting you know that this was a future tense because you have some of those scoffers out there, those so-called apologists that try to say that many of these prophecies are fulfilled already. It doesn't say that this is for the future. It doesn't say that this is for a later time. It says it's for the last days. Letting you know that's in the cycle that we're in now that these prophecies would be fulfilled, all right, in these last days. Not in biblical times, in these last days, right? And then the other thing is he says he called his sons together. So now when we go back to read verse 5, that first part.
Hey, hold on a second. Hey, kick out this Byron Bull. I already saw where he was going. Kick him out.
Oh, there we go. All right. Okay, go ahead.
Sir, we got verse it. 2.
You,
you want 2 or 5?
Yes, 5.
It's the book of Genesis, chapter 49 and verse 5. Simeon and Levi are brethren.
So he just said that he called his sons together. So So they know that they're brethren. They know that they're brothers, okay? They know that they're brothers. So what he's telling you here...
Hey, go put him in the internet corner, bro.
And he said, put him here. Put
go put him on internet timeout, man.
Put him on the timeout. And so Simeon and Levi are brethren. Brethren. But he already just said that they're sons. And he's letting you know that this was something that would befall them in the last days. The prophecy here is to let you know that they would live amongst each other, right? So on that island, like when we read during the first episode of the of what we were doing with the Dominican Republic, they spoke about what the island known as Hispaniola or Quisqueya. There's a portion of it that is known as Haiti, all right? So that they would live in close proximity to each other. Come on.
Instruments of cruelty are in their habitation.
Right, so that's going into primarily voodoo. Also, they are very violent with each other. We're just reading about the Parsley Massacre. Come on.
Verse 6. Oh, my soul, come not thou into their secret, unto their assembly, mine honor, be not thou united.
They are not united, all right? In these last days, they would not be united. So in verse 5, he talks about how they are brethren, but we already established that those are his sons. So we know that they're brethren. So he's letting you know that in these last days, they would not be united. So though they would be living close to each other, they would have issues with each other. Come on.
For in their anger, they slew a man. And in their self-will, they digged down a wall.
Right. So they have this spirit in them to be this way. Right. They have the spirit in them to be this way. Come on.
Verse 7. Be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel.
Right. So this is what, when we start to read these characteristics right now, this is what it's going into. All right.
Okay,
this is what it's going into.
Hold on. It says right there in 7. It says, I will divide them in Jacob.
Yep.
The land known as Quisqueya was divided.
Yes.
It's divided today.
Yep.
That's whole prophet. Yeah. Y'all don't think this is a true book, man. I'll tell you, man. Man.
Yep. All praise. And then you got scoffers on there talking about who's this, who's that. why ain't he doing his own show, bringing out the truth?
Right. If you know so much, go do your own show and talk about whatever topic you want.
Your bull is right. You full of.
Come on, man.
Right. SH. Anyway, let's go back. The Parsley Massacre. All right. So as a result of the massacre, virtually the entire Haitian population that was in the Dominican frontier was either killed or forced to flee across the border. And they estimate the deaths, you know, I don't know how they come up with these numbers, but minimum 12,168 up to 35,000 dead. 35,000 by the Dominican army. The background was Dominican dictator Rafael Trujillo, a strong opponent of anti-Haitianism. All right, let's just highlight that real quick so we can read the anti-Haitianism. Don't click on it. Anti-Haitianismo, also called anti-Haitianism, Haitianismo in some English sources, that's a mouthful in Spanish, is prejudice or social discrimination against Haitians in the Dominican Republic. So they have their own name for it. That's how prevalent it was. You talking the Bible's not a true book, the prophecy that we just read about that?
Wait, because racism is racismo, so they just made up their own thing.
Yes.
And
yes.
For racism.
Yes.
Wow.
They said, curse be their anger.
Wow.
Curse be their anger, right? regarded Haitians as a racially and culturally inferior people. And I'm going to show you something. That is the same rhetoric and language that came from the United States. That's how they treated the natives that were here, the indigenous, and then the so-called Southern Kingdom, the Judah, all right, that they were racially and culturally inferior. So remember, Trujillo's their guy. Trujillo was coached by them. Trujillo was indoctrinated by them. So he came back with this as a directive, right? And because it's in their spirit to do so, it wasn't that hard for them to buy into it. So he saw Haitian migration as a detriment to the social and economic development of the Dominican nation. Sounds a lot like the way they are about immigration here in the United States now. There is no feeling of humanity, nor political reason, nor any circumstantial convenience that can force us to look indifferently at the Haitian migration. That type is frankly undesirable. Of pure African race, they cannot represent us for any ethnic incentive. Now, and what's funny, stay with me with this, because once we move on from Trujillo, I'm going to read pages from the book, And you're going to see the irony of him saying that. Remember what I said earlier, the book's going to bring out that in, when they got to the United States, many of them were just considered black people who spoke Spanish. So you want to talk about hatred. You see, because you look at the picture of Trujillo and you say, okay, he looks very fair complexion. But we also saw in the documentary, they had the one brother that they showed the picture of who he was torturing, right? And that was a Simeonite that he was torturing. Because Haitians, they just killed. They didn't torture him. They just killed him. And he was dark. He was dark-skinned. So the fact that he would talk about this being they were African and whatever, it's funny because when they got here, they were considered inferior just based on their representation. And people thought they were blacks that spoke Spanish. Not well-nourished and worse dressed, they are weak, though very prolific due to their low living conditions. For that same reason, the Haitian that enters lives afflicted by numerous and capital vices and is necessarily affected by disease and physiological deficiencies, which are endemic at the lowest levels of society. This is Trujillo saying this. On 2 October 1937, Trujillo made his intentions toward the Haitian community clear in a brief speech he gave during a celebration in his honor in the province of Dajabón. For some months, I have traveled and traversed the border in every sense of the word. I have seen, investigated, and inquired about the need of the needs of the population. To the Dominicans who were complaining of the depredations by Haitians living among them, thefts of cattle, provisions, fruits, etc., and were thus prevented from enjoying in peace the products of their labor, I have responded, I will fix this. And we have already begun to remedy the situation. 300 Haitians are now dead in Banica. This remedy will continue. So he's basically saying that he's going to basically wipe them out. The massacre. Trujillo reportedly acted in response to reports of Haitians stealing cattle and crops from Dominican borderland residents. You know, and you got to remember, I mean, this was an evil dude to turn against his people this way. But he was indoctrinated by the United States. They didn't want a united Haiti and Dominican Republic. That didn't serve their purposes.
Right.
Remember, their thing is for us to be scattered, right? And the prophecy had to be fulfilled, right? It wasn't until Christ is preached unto them and that they're Israelites that you're going to start to see a coming together of those, all right? So Trujillo commanded his army to kill all Haitians living in the Dominican Republic's northwest, not even arrest them, not even deport them. He said kill them in the northwestern frontier and in certain parts of the contiguous Cibao region. Between October 2nd and October 8th, hundreds of Dominican troops who came mostly from other areas of the country poured into the region. These armed forces killed Haitians with rifles, machetes, shovels, knives, and bayonets. Haitian children were reportedly thrown in the air and caught by soldiers' bayonets, then thrown on their mothers' corpses. Some died while trying to flee to Haiti across the Massacre River that divides it. They call it the Massacre River now.
Hey, okay, this shouldn't really surprise anybody, right? Because we're wise to do evil, right?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't the Aztecs and Mayans have beef? Same people.
You see that too in
Apocalypto.
Apocalypto. Like how the lower right. class and the upper, they took the lower class right. ones to right. sacrifice them.
Right. So the point is that we this our people are evil.
Yes.
Our unrepentant people are evil.
And our hatred for each so other is worse.
Right. So I bring that up, right, because people like you brought up earlier, oh, well, he's Esau. No. Necessarily. So what about the Mayans and the Aztecs? They were Esau too?
Right.
And they were killing each other?
Right.
Apocalypto showed it best.
Right. Yeah, so all the soldiers Esau too that yeah. carried it out?
Yeah.
And you can't have hundreds and thousands of soldiers and say that they were all just following orders. That means they were in it as well. And we just read the prophecy of why it happened. Because you have some knuckleheads who say, see, that's why they're not our people. The Haitians are, but they're not because they killed us.
And all that is that's more proof of the hate.
Right. Right. That yeah, exactly. That just validates it even more. Your hate proves the scriptures true even
right.
more.
That's right.
Right. So it says, some died while trying to flee to Haiti across the Massacre River that divides the two nations. Survivors who managed to cross the border and return to Haiti told stories of family members being hacked with machetes and strangled by the soldiers and children bashed against rocks and tree trunks. Sounds very much like what they did to us. Right?
I guess gang members are Esau.
If somebody goes with that logic, right? It right. That's a good. Hey, that's a good. That's a
yeah,
good.
Yeah, the bloods. Oh, I guess because it's red handkerchiefs. They're Esau, right?
Right.
That means red.
Right. Right.
Right. And they're killing the Crips. Which are
oh, you deep. You deep. You deep. You deep. So it says. Where was I? The use of military.
Hey, knock out the truth, and that's probably how he actually really thinks it's spelled. Be real.
Yes, sir.
He needs some milk.
I shouldn't be having to do this, man. This is why we have other people on here.
Right. Isn't that why you have multiple people back there?
But obviously, I see I have to. And there's a brother that asked a question here, I guess, about Dominicans being Taino. Y'all need to edify them. We're doing other stuff.
If that was a real IUIC follower, he wouldn't ask that question. Because you know,
Nate.
Nate's talking about why don't we reach out to the Afro ones in the hood.
He said Nate. So you know that's a hate of IUIC.
Right. No, and not just that. You would see our works, and you know that's out there. Freak out of here, man.
Oh, today, they're live today.
Yeah, man. Boy.
Hey, with everything going on in the world, right, instead of uniting, right, so we can go home, right, they freaking doing this crap.
Hey, man, some are reserved for utter destruction, bro, from the time of Genesis, when the sons of God mixed with the daughters of men, reserved to everlasting darkness.
Everlasting contempt, according to Daniel 12.
And what's the? There's the other one. Is it James or Jude where it talks about they reserve to that? Anyway, so the use of military units from outside the region was not always enough to expedite soldiers. Months later, killing of Haitians. U.S. legation informants reported that many soldiers confessed that in order to perform such ghastly slaughter, they had to get blind drunk. Several months later, a barrage of killings and repatriations of Haitians occurred in the southern frontier. Lauren Derby claims that a majority of those who died were born in the Dominican Republic and belonged to well-established Haitian communities in the borderlands. However, it is difficult for anyone to ascertain a victim's place of birth, especially considering that, in most cases, their identities are unknown, and their births may not have been officially recorded. Furthermore, Haiti was historically awarded citizenship by Jus Sanguinis, making anyone with a Haitian parent a Haitian citizen. Whereas from as early as 1929 until 2014, the Dominican Republic followed a restricted jus soli citizenship policy, which excluded from this privilege legal residents and anyone not having legal permanent residency status.
Hey, Kai, what are you looking for that? Those of you that are Simeon, all right, or quote-unquote Dominican, falsely so-called, y'all know that one of the ways that Simeon proves if someone is Levi or not is they have them say a word called perihili.
Yeah.
And if they don't pronounce it correctly, that's their indication that they're Haitian, that they're Levi. But I want you to understand something. I don't know where it's at right now. That's in the scriptures. That happened in the scriptures. That actually happened with Ephraim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because Benjamin, if I'm I forgot which tribe it was. They wanted to kill the Ephraimites. It's in the Chronicles, if I'm not mistaken. Because we did not Meshivobet or something. That was a word.
Yeah, there was a word that
that we couldn't say.
That remember? Ephraim couldn't say.
Yeah,
right.
Because you know,
Hebrew.
Right. Yep. We just say we can't speak right now.
Uh-huh.
But the point I'm making is that this is all spiritual, man. It's all spiritual. That was going on back in biblical times too.
Right. And I'm glad you said that because I'm going to reemphasize after we read the atrocities that were done. Let's read Genesis 49 and 7 again. All right. It's very indicative of it. Come on.
This is the book of Genesis, chapter 49 and verse 7. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce.
You have to have fierce anger, all right, in order to go ahead and do those type of things that they did. They said some of them had to get blind drunk, right? So what we just read, all right, it's a fierce anger. Come on.
And their wrath. For it was cruel.
It was cruel. The stuff that we just read, how they were doing that to the babies and stuff like that, that was cruel. I'm not talking about Esau here. We're talking about Israel. These are the sons of Jacob. Come on.
I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel.
Right. Oh, they said that's Judges 12 and 6 about the...
All praises, man. All praises. Okay, I thought it was Chronicles.
Now, that was Amariah with the... You know, he got the concordance. No, he texted it to me.
Oh, he wrote it there too. Yeah.
Judges 12 and 6.
Yeah, Shibboleth. Yeah.
You ready?
Shibboleth. Yeah, go ahead. Yep. Read that. Right. So this is what they would test Ephraim with. Go ahead. Because remember, Ephraim, because of the split, right, they were not supposed to, well, they had issues with Ephraim. Let's just say at this time it was not the split. They had issues with Northern Kingdom. All right. Go ahead.
This is the book of Judges, chapter 12 and verse 6. Then they said unto him, say now.
Stop. Read verse 4 first so that they understand
the
background.
You got to get the context. Yep.
Uh-huh.
This is the book of Judges, chapter 12 and verse 4.
Read it out.
Then Jephthah gathered together all the men of Gilead and fought with Ephraim. And the men of Gilead smote Ephraim because they said, you Gileadites are fugitives among Ephraim, among the Ephraimites and among the Manassites. And the Gileadites took the passages of Jordan before the Ephraimites. And it was so that when those Ephraimites which were escaped said, let me go over, that the men of Gilead said unto him, art thou an Ephraimite? If he said nay.
Stop. So now, listen, because first off, to go to show you at this time, everybody still kind of looked the same, right? Because later we're going to talk about the speckled bird and stuff. Everybody still kind of looked the same because they had to ask him, are you an Ephraimite?
Right, because they didn't have DAs back then.
Right, they didn't have DAs, they didn't have wavy hair. Right. And we're looking like us yet. So he said, art thou an Ephraimite? And if he said nay, so this is the same, showing you just in the same spirit of the vein of what they do in the Dominican Republic now where you have to say Perejit. Right? Go ahead.
Verse 6. Then said they unto him, say now, Shibboleth.
Shibboleth. Wait, stop. Before you get into that. And it's interesting that they got to ask Levi that now in modern times, because then that means Dominicans look a lot like the Levites
But that's why they got it right.
So exactly. They got to ask, right? So the same point that I made, that back then Ephraim looked a lot like the rest of the Israelites.
Although some Levites look Ephraim.
Yes. Go ahead. So verse 6.
Verse 6. Then said they unto him, say now, Shibboleth. And he said, Shibboleth.
And no, and he said, Sibboleth. He didn't say
the H.
So even when you read it, they tell you that he didn't say it right. They said, say Shibboleth, and he said, Sibboleth. Sounded like Mike Tyson.
Finish him.
Go ahead. But look, they explain it. Go ahead. Read.
For he could not frame to pronounce it right.
He could not frame to pronounce it right. Come on.
Then they took him and slew him at the passages of Jordan.
Hey, exactly what they do today with Simeon and
yes,
Levi. You tell
exactly,
me this is not
that's
a true
exactly
book, man.
What it is. That's exactly what it
they
is.
They don't even know that what they did was history, and they're doing it.
Hey, and you're right. You're definitely, hey, and I'm going to tell you something else. Till this day, other northern kingdom tries to get on Ephraim because there's certain things in Spanish that we don't pronounce right.
Yeah, like everything.
Like, Ephraim's known for some jacked up Spanish.
That slang's bad.
Like rolling the R's, not too good.
No need to. That's too much work, man.
They used to say it sounds like you're spitting up phlegm. We gotta got it.
Arroz.
No, see, but if I emphasize it, I can. If you're talking regular, like just regular at regular speed, a lot of times Ephraim don't pronounce stuff right.
I think it's the Ephraimites from New York don't pronounce anything right.
Well, yeah.
I mean, no Northern Kingdom in New York.
No, Northern Kingdom in New York. Right, exactly. Anyway, let's go back to the Parsley Massacre.
Oh, man.
Hey, I'm telling you, the Bible got it all covered, man. Got it all covered. So it says the exact number of Haitian migration to the Dominican Republic is not readily available, but it is Let me start from the top of contributing factors. I'll start from the top. Haitian-Dominican relations have long been strained by territorial disputes and competition for the resources of Hispaniola. Between the years 1910 to 1930, there was an extensive migration of Haitians to their neighboring countries of Dominican Republic and Cuba in search of work. So, yes, some of Manessa, they're Levi, and some people who are repping Manessa, some people who are repping Levi can be Manessa. So it says the exact number of Haitian migration to the Dominican Republic is not readily available, but it is more than the estimated 200,000 that emigrated to Cuba. So that's a significant amount of Levi that went to Cuba. It says it's 200,000 supposedly went to Cuba, and it says more migrated into what's known as the Dominican Republic. Among several authors, the Haitian-Dominican Republic migration corridor is concurred as far more important than the Haiti-Cuba migration due to geographic proximity. On the other hand, the large influx of Haitians to the Dominican Republic further divided the complicated relationship between the two nations.
The Dominican Republic, formerly the Spanish colony of Santo Domingo, is the eastern portion of the island of Hispaniola and occupies 5/8 of the land while having 10 million inhabitants. In contrast, Haiti, the former French colony of Saint Domingue, is one of the western 3/8 of the island and has almost exactly the same population with an estimated 200 people per square kilometer. So there's more land on the Dominican Republic side, and they have about 10 million people. And there's only 3/8 of that land on the other side, and they also have about 10 million people. So you can now start to see, right, not enough land, there's less, so on and so forth. Population growth led to many Haitians living on land too mountainous, eroded, and dry for productive farming. So, you know, we often get on Haiti and everything like that, but there's a background to it and why it's like that, right? So basically it forced them to live in parts where you could not productively farm. Instead of staying on lands incapable of supporting them, many Haitians migrated to Dominican soil where land hunger was low. While Haitians benefited by gaining farmland, Dominicans in the borderlands subsisted mostly on agriculture and benefited from the ease of exchange of goods with Haitian markets. Due to inadequate roadways connecting the borderlands to major cities, communication with Dominican markets was so limited that the small commercial surplus of the former frontier slowly moved towards Haiti. This threatened Trujillo's regime. So basically, the flow of economics was more prevailing on Haiti's side, and Trujillo didn't like that because of longstanding border disputes between the two nations. If large numbers of Haitian immigrants began to occupy the less densely populated Dominican borderlands, the Haitian government might try to make a case for claiming Dominican land. Additionally, loose borders let contraband pass freely and without taxes between nations, depriving the Dominican Republic of tariff revenue. Furthermore, the Dominican government saw the loose borderlands as a liability in terms of possible formation of revolutionary groups that could flee across the border with ease while at the same time amassing weapons and followers, because he also wanted to protect his reign, of course. That's all we're going to read on that part with the massacre. Let's go back to where we were. All right, so we left it there. So it says, during his long rule, the Trujillo government extended its policy of state terrorism beyond national borders. Notorious examples of Trujillo's reach abroad are the unsuccessful assassination attempt in Caracas against Venezuelan President Romulo Betancourt in 1960, the abduction and subsequent. Now, mind you, this was all, I guarantee you, that was the U.S. trying to get him to be the one to take out somebody they didn't want in Venezuela. The abduction and subsequent disappearance in New York City of the Spaniard Jesus Galindez in 1956. The murder of writer Jose Almoina in Mexico, also a Spaniard, and crimes committed against Cubans, Costa Ricans, Nicaraguans, and Puerto Ricans, as well as Americans. So, you know, he wasn't just against Haiti. He was just on anybody, right? It was like all over the place. So it says by 1960, Trujillo had amassed a net worth of $800 million, which would be the equivalent of $5.3 billion today. On 30 May 1961, Trujillo was assassinated by conspirators sponsored by the Central Intelligence Agency. So when they were done with him, the CIA supported conspirators and they took him out. That's how they operate. They do things by proxy. In the immediate aftermath, Trujillo's son, Ramaphis, took temporary control of the country. See the name? Ramaphis. Remember what I was telling you earlier about the makers and the names?
Ramaphis. Rafa. I bet they called him Rafa.
Ramfi. Ramfiito. Took temporary...
Want some frito?
Took temporary control of the country and vowed to kill those involved in the death of his father. By 19 November 1961, Trujillo's relatives and cronies, such as Joaquin Balaguer, who fled to New York City, were forced to leave the country.
Oh, there goes Balaguer.
Yeah, he was his boy. I get them close. It's been so many. I'm, like you said, we're jet lagged. But not before killing the surviving members of the assassination plot. The Trujillo era unfolded in a Hispanic Caribbean environment that was particularly fertile for dictatorial regimes. In the countries of the Caribbean basin alone, his dictatorship, in whole or in part, was concurrent with those in Cuba, Nicaragua, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Venezuela, and Haiti. In retrospect, the Trujillo dictatorship has been characterized as more prominent and more brutal than those that rose and fell around it. Trujillo remains a polarizing figure in the Dominican Republic, The sheer longevity of his rule makes a detached evaluation difficult, because there's some that still support him. You'll see like political groups that still believe in his ideals and things like that over there. While his supporters credit him for bringing stability and prosperity to the country, others criticize his heavy-handed rule and disregard for civil rights and freedoms. Let's jump down real quick just to his rise to power, and then we're going to wrap up with him and move on to the book. All right, rise to power. Excuse me. In 1916, the United States occupied the Dominican Republic following 28 revolutions in 50 years. So there's a lot of instability there. Remember when I said they'll be scattered, right? They'll be scattered in Jacob, let them be divided. They were not able to find any stability on the island, right? And we're talking about DR, but this also affected Haiti as well, because they're sharing the same space. The occupying force soon established a Dominican army constabulary to impose order. Trujillo joined the National Guard in 1918 and trained with the U.S. Marines. So, again, there's always a little subtle link where you're able to see how they had U.S. influence. And then it's those things where you got to fill in the blanks. How much influence did they really have? Well, enough to help them rise to power, so on and so forth. Seeing an opportunity, Trujillo impressed the recruiters and won promotion from cadet to general and commander-in-chief of the army in only 9 years. That's unheard of, to become a general and commander-in-chief of an army in 9 years. Mm-hmm. So you know that he had the backing of the United States to help him rise through the ranks, because they were setting up their guy. A rebellion, or coup d'etat, against Dominican President Horacio Vasquez broke out in February 1930 in Santiago. Trujillo secretly cut a deal with the rebel leader, Rafael Estrella Ureña. In return for Trujillo letting Estrella take power, Estrella would allow Trujillo to run for president in new elections. As the rebels marched towards Santo Domingo, Vasquez ordered Trujillo to suppress them. However, feigning neutrality, Trujillo kept his men in barracks, allowing Estrella's rebels to take the capital virtually unopposed. On 3 March, Estrella was proclaimed acting president, with Trujillo confirmed as head of the police and of the army. As per their agreement, Trujillo became the presidential nominee of the Patriotic Coalition of Citizens, with Estrella as his running mate. The other candidates became targets of harassment by the army. When it became apparent that the army would allow only Trujillo to campaign unhindered, the other candidates pulled out. Ultimately, the Trujillo-Estrella ticket was proclaimed victorious with an implausible 99% of the vote. In a note to the State Department, American Ambassador Charles Boyd Curtis wrote that Trujillo received far more votes than actual voters. He received more votes. So the whole thing was just freaking rigged.
Implausible. Sound like Bush.
Right. There was something else I wanted to read about the... Hold on. Was we named? You guys say something if you want. I'm trying to find it.
Implausible. It was implausible. They be rigging stuff, man, to work in their favor, man. Hey, listen, man, at the end of the day, man, you are always going to have Benedict Arnolds within our nation. Mm-hmm. You're always going to have people that love the material things more than their own people.
That's right.
That's why this truth is a different level, all right? Because all of us that are out here teaching, all right, put our lives on the line for this truth. Right. That's the difference.
Right.
All right. That's a huge difference back there, man. So.
All right. I found it. I want to read the thing about immigration. So get me that. Go down to the poet says immigration. So it says, Trujillo was known for his open door policy, accepting Jewish refugees from Europe, Japanese migration during the 1930s, and exiles from Spain following its civil war. He developed a uniquely Dominican policy of racial discrimination, anti-Haitianismo, all right, anti-Haitianism, targeting the mostly black inhabitants of his neighboring country and those within the Platano Curtain, including many Afro-Dominican citizens. So even amongst his own citizens, he had this going on. So there's that colorism at play. At the 1938 Avian Conference, the Dominican Republic was the only country willing to accept many Jews and offered to accept up to 100,000 refugees on generous terms. So you could tell this is all, he was a a plant of the United States. In 1940, an agreement was signed, and Trujillo donated 26,000 acres of his properties for settlements. The first settlers arrived in May 1940. Eventually, some 800 settlers came to Sousa, and most moved later on to the United States. Refugees from Europe broadened the Dominican Republic's tax base and added more whites to the predominantly mixed-race nation. The government favored white refugees over others, while Dominican troops expelled illegal immigrants, resulting in the 1937 Parsley Massacre. All right. So there's a lot more about him. If you read the rest of the wiki, there's so much information about Trujillo that you can go into on your own.
Hey, so that explains, I'm just thinking now, how you have a lot of Moabites mm-hmm. in Dominican Republic.
Mm-hmm. In the Caribbean in general. I remember going to the Bahamas. This was, I don't know if it was before the truth or I was only in a couple of years. Yeah, I think I was in already like a couple of years. And they were saying how the guy that took us around the island, and he showed us there's like Asian communities everywhere there, and they do like the construction. Like they were constructing something in the Bahamas. He was like, yeah, that's all like Chinese. China be influencing, infiltrating everywhere.
They do, because they make platanos in the Chinese restaurants, mm-hmm. the maduros and everything. That they like, they know what to.
Oh hell yeah! I don't think they do it in Chinese restaurants out here. They did it in New York. The Chinese restaurants out here do platanos?
I don't think so.
Man, and maduros too.
With the half chicken.
Yeah, with the half chicken, or if you wanted it with totones. They stay infiltrating. Yeah, they stay infiltrating.
They know which weave. Yeah, they ain't no damn platano trees in China. Come on, man. Mm-hmm. They don't grow out there, man.
Bruh.
Nah, they pick that up.
They don't grow. That's a Caribbean thing.
Yeah.
They don't grow that.
It definitely
there.
Is. It definitely.
How do you know about that?
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to jump into the book. All right. We're going to read some stuff. There's a lot of reading today. I got some scriptures that are going to pop off in a little bit. All right. We went through some already. So let's go to the first page. It'll say chapter 7 at the top. There we go. All right. I'm going to start from the highlights because I don't need the rest. So between 1961 and remember, 61 was when he was assassinated. So things opened up over there in Dominican Republic. So between Trujillo, I'm talking about. So between 1961 and 1986, more than 400,000 people legally immigrated to the United States from the Dominican Republic, 400,000 during that time span. And another 44,000 moved to Puerto Rico. So 44,000 Dominicans emigrated and stayed in Puerto Rico. So there's some Simeon in Puerto Rico.
Hey, we are who your father is, man, at this point, man. We'll figure that out.
That's it. That's why you just go by that. That's why you just go by that. You imagine, bro, we walking up to the Ephraim. Those where we make it, right? We're going to be like, oh, happy. Just walk.
Hey, the disciple watching that, you're going to go, oh, oh.
Oh, oh, loco. Oh, loco. Vete para allá con Pablo.
No, tú estás para allá.
Tú estás para allá.
Tú estás pasado. Vete al otro.
Pedro.
La otra verja.
And another 44,000 moved to Puerto Rico, while thousands more entered both places illegally. More than 300,000 Dominicans lived in New York City by 1990, and the total was expected to reach 700,000 early in the millennium, making Dominican migration one of the largest to this country of the past 40 years. Much like the Puerto Ricans of the 1950s, Dominicans went largely unnoticed at first. New Yorkers tended to mistake them for blacks who happened to speak Spanish. So it's letting you know that they also thought that about a lot of Puerto Ricans that came as well, right? Oh, they're just black people that happen to speak Spanish. By the 1990s, however, they had become the second largest Hispanic group in the Northeast. So now, I bring that out because they were mistaken for blacks. Let's get Hosea 7 and 8. Mm-hmm. Hosea 7 and 8. Because we had a bunch of freaking the scoffers wild in force beginning of the show here. Hosea 7 and 8. Let's read that. Let's read the prophecy of what the scripture says here for those that go by. Hey, I always bring this out. It don't even bother me anymore. It's just stupid.
No, I just don't want the people that are not in the strong spirit to be.
Right, right. Yeah.
Don't bother me none.
Right. We got to get them out so that they don't offend the little ones, right? Pull somebody out.
Hell no.
He gonna play that one out.
He must have just got that new toy, huh?
Just
got that new sound effect.
Just got it.
Let me try this out.
Hey, real quick. That's the officer from Arkansas.
Oh, okay. that's our officer that lives here now?
No. The one that stayed back over there.
Okay, again, so you just got a new toy. I got you.
And that's actually Othaniel. That's not me.
Threw him under the bus. We need to under the bus.
Hey,
instead
of hitting those sound effects, why don't you go answer some questions on these damn comments?
Come on, man.
Yeah, how about that? How about that? Anyway, so you got the people out there who go into the color aspect of this, but we're going to explain a little bit how that happens. So remember, we read in Judges that once upon a time, they had to ask because that means we all look the same, right? We know through the various captivities, things change. But then someone will say, well, if that's the case, then that means you guys aren't pure. You know, many of you are Spaniards, right? So let's read this first, and we're gonna deal with all of that right now. Come on.
This is the book of Hosea, chapter 7 and verse 8. Ephraim, he hath mixed himself among the people. Ephraim is a cake not turned.
Right, so it says Ephraim, and it doesn't just mean so-called Puerto Ricans. It means Northern Kingdom in general, have mixed themselves among the people. Ephraim is a cake not turned, right? So we'll use a pancake as an example, right? If you don't turn one side gets cooked and is darker, and the other is not. There's a couple of references in scriptures. The other one we're going to read is when it talks about speckled bird, all right? And it's giving you the same indication about that. But some people will say mixed, right? Give me the definition of mingle, all right? And then let me get Psalms 106 and 35. We're going to come back to Hosea. Because we got knuckleheads that think they know the Bible. They still in 1980. They're still in 1990.
They're in the truth.
T-R-U-F.
T-R-O-O-F.
T-R-O-O-F.
Yeah, they're in the truth.
106 and what? Psalm 106 and 35. All right.
Ready?
Start at 34.
This is the book of Psalms, chapter 106 and 34. They did not destroy the nations concerning whom the Lord commanded them.
Right, so when we were supposed to go into and conquer a place, we were supposed to destroy those nations because the Most High knew the pollution that would come with them. But many times we didn't. We desired their women. We desired their gods. We desired whatever it was. So we didn't. Letting you know that this is a habit amongst Israel, right? Not just Northern Kingdom, amongst all Israel. We prefer the other nations. We stick up for the other nations. Come on.
35. But were mingled among the heathen and learned their works.
Mingled, right? So mix or cause to mix together. Now, I just want the similar. Because remember, we read in Hosea 7 and 8, it says mixed himself. Mix is mingle. It's the same thing. Because some people say, oh, that just means, you know, they were there amongst them. That doesn't mean that they were mixed as far as their bloodline. Cake not turned is not
what,
going into
what did
that.
You just read? What scripture?
Psalms 106 and 35.
Okay, I got a precept.
Okay. So it says mix, blend, intermingle, intermix. What do they call it? They say you intermix. All right. Join, amalgamate, fuse or merge, coalesce. That means seed exchanged with seed, which starts to then degrade the bloodline, and you start to wind up getting different appearances amongst Israel. Go ahead. What were you going to bring up?
Give me 1 Ezra 8:69 and 70. More.
Oh, I had that.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I have it. Yep. Okay, I have it in my notes. All right. Praise you in the spirit. All Let's go back and read Hosea first, and then we're going to go and read 1 Ezra. You in the spirit. Literally have that down.
You want 7 and 8 again?
Yeah, I want 7 and 8 again, so we don't lose the thought, and then we're going to go to 1 Ezra 8 and 69.
This is the book of Hosea, chapter 7 and verse 8. Ephraim, he hath mixed himself among the people. Ephraim is a cake not turned.
Again, so there was intermixing, having children, right? Sometimes by force with the rape, right? Other times, they just went and they wanted to mix with other nations, right? And what we read in Psalms goes for all Israel. And what we're going to read in Ezra goes for all Israel, not just Ephraim, but to let you know it was a tendency among us, okay? Let's get 1 Ezra 8 and 69.
This is the book of 1 Ezra, chapter 8 and verse 69. The nation of Israel, the princes, the priests, and Levites have not put away from them the strange people of the land.
Right, same, similar to what we read in Psalm 106, 34, before we read verse 35, right? Come on.
Nor the pollutions of the Gentiles, to wit, of the Canaanites, Hittites, Pharisees, Jebusites, and the Moabites, Egyptians, and Edomites.
And there's a plethora of looks within mixing with all those nations, letting you know that we were mixing from then with all those nations.
So they mention Africans there.
Yep.
They mention Japanese there.
Yep.
I mean Chinese.
Uh-huh.
And they mention Caucasian.
Yep. So you got all those different looks in Israel. Got all those different looks in Israel. Come on.
Verse 70. For both they and their sons have married with their daughters.
Again, giving more context to the mix and mingle.
Wait. What does it say? Wait. Read it again a second.
Verse 70. For both they and their sons.
They and their sons, yes. Meaning what? That seed
that
is still
seed.
Israel.
Right.
They just mix with the other nation. You are who your father is, according to Numbers 1:18.
Right.
That's what that is proving, right? No, it specifically says that it was the man.
Yes. And it says with their daughters, meaning who?
Right.
The Gentiles, to wit,
right.
The Canaanites, Hittites,
right.
Pharisees, Jebusites,
all
of
go.
Those, right?
There
come
you
on.
Go.
And he's going to expound even more what you said, because this is what he says. Mm. Come on.
And the holy seed.
The holy seed, which comes from the man, the holy seed.
Is mixed with the strange people of the land.
Again, mixed, also meaning mingled. Come on.
And from the beginning of this matter, the rulers and the great men have been partakers of this iniquity.
It says from the beginning of this matter, meaning from the moment Israel was mixed and exposed to these other nations, this is what went on. And it wasn't just ones that were in captives. It says rulers and the great men also did it.
Yep.
So that means it wasn't just by compulsion. They were willing to do so.
Guess what? 2 points. That's what happened in Genesis 6 before the flood.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The sons of God
yep.
mingled with the sons of men.
From the beginning of that matter.
Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. And in addition to that, I lost my train of thought, man, because that one just came in my head. Go ahead, man. You just threw me off.
So going back to Genesis, when you read it in, it's Genesis 5, right? It tells you from then. It says from the beginning of the matter. Let's get that real quick. From the beginning of this matter is what we read in Ezra.
5 and 1.
It's 6.
I know what I wanted.
It's 6.
I know. After Genesis.
Don't lose it.
No.
Genesis 6 and 1.
Okay. Pretty cool. This is the book of Genesis, chapter 6 and verse 1.
So what we read in 1 Ezra 8 and 70, it says from the beginning of this matter, this is the beginning of the matter that it's talking about. Come on.
And it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men.
The Gentiles, to wit, all those different ones that were mentioned. So the sons of God being the Israelites. Remember, it said the princes, the Israelites, the Levites, all Israel, not just Northern Kingdom. Come on.
That they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose.
So they were mixing. They were mingling. The holy seed was being diminished from then. Go ahead.
And again, for the new viewers, give me Romans 8:16. Here's the conclusion of the whole matter. Here's at the end of the day, here's how you know you Israel.
This is the book of Romans chapter 8 and verse 16. The spirit itself beareth witness with our spirit.
The spirit itself, the Bible, everything in the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, that's the spirit itself beareth witness with our spirits. Everyone in this room, those that are watching on here today that are Israelite men and women, go ahead,
that we are the children of God.
And that's it. You can't force anybody to believe they are or they're not. It's a spiritual thing. I've told you on previous shows, our life is spiritual. Our bodies just carry our spirits. It's a spirit. Everything is spiritual in life. You cannot try to lead someone down to the finish line, meaning to the kingdom. If they get it, they get it. They don't. Many are called, few are chosen. Don't go in. We all did at the beginning. You know what? That ain't profitable. Okay? This is it. If you're an Israelite, your spirit is gonna be right with the scriptures and everything that comes out. Right? That goes back to the parable of the wheat and the tares. It's very simple.
Right.
It's very simple.
Right. Let's go back to Hosea 7 and read 7 and 8 again.
This is the book of Hosea, chapter 7 and verse 8. Ephraim, he hath mixed himself among the people. Ephraim is a cake not turned.
Right, so Ephraim is a cake not turned. I tell you that because the reason we went through all those precepts is because you'll have some people out there that say that's not talking about the way the appearance of Ephraim is today, that it doesn't have to do with that. But we just proved you precept upon precept that that's exactly what the hell
all day long,
about.
Man. We slap. We brought out the truth.
Right. Jeremiah 12 and 9.
This is the book of Jeremiah, chapter 12 and verse 9.
Freedom!
Mine heritage is unto me as a speckled bird. The birds round about are against her. Come ye, assemble all the beasts of the field. Come to devour.
Right, so he's saying my heritage, the emphasis we want from that is my heritage is a speckled bird. Can you look up pictures of a speckled bird? I know Cap always likes to look up the pictures when we put that up.
Now you have to because a picture's worth a thousand words. Y'all got to see for yourself.
Look up pictures of a speckled bird.
Just put it exactly like that.
All right. Speckled bird. Put speckle.
E-D.
L-E. Bird.
B-I-R-D.
Images. No, not the song. That always pops up, whoever the fuck that guy is.
What about images? Images.
Images. Images. Images.
Look at this.
All right. Look at the different colors, right? So you
same
have a speckled
bird.
Look, so you have a speckled bird that's white with gray hair. You have one that's brown in the middle. You got a black one with white flecks.
Black with white stripes.
It is what it is. It ain't what it ain't. Look, there's one that's blue. Keep going. Keep going. Look, all the different types of speckled birds. Look, you got birds of the Bible. Look at that one. That's
the Bible's a true book, man. The Most High put clues in the Bible for those that the Spirit bear witness with your spirit to go ahead and prove.
Look, hey,
who we
are. That one got red in it.
Look at that.
For people that oh, you're red, you like Esau. Freaking idiots. All right.
Those are all the same species is the point of the scripture.
Right. Right. And it says all the other birds round about it are against it. So it's a speckled bird. Let's go back to Hosea 7 and 8. Hosea 7 and 8. You dropped it? No, we're going back. You got to keep the fingers in
there. Are you nervous, bro?
No,
that was too much heat.
Keep the fingers in there. Keep the fingers in there.
This is the book of Hosea, chapter 7 and verse 8. Ephraim, he hath mixed himself among the people. Ephraim is a cake not turned.
So the other argument that you get then is, well, if that's the case, we already covered the sons part in Ezra, right? And the holy seed. So we know it's the sons. Genesis 6 also said the sons were mixing. So we know that the seed goes through the man so that there's still Israel here. But what about the ones that might not be Israel? Let's go to Hosea 9 and 13, 13 and 14. Most High covered it all. Most High covered it all.
This is the book of Hosea chapter 9 and verse 13.
Freedom!
Ephraim, as I saw Tyrus, is planted in a pleasant place, but Ephraim shall bring forth his children to the murderer.
The pleasant place is Puerto Rico, it's the Dominican Republic, it's Cuba. Remember, the United States wanted the land, the resources, the richness of the soil in these places. That's what made them pleasant. That's what made them valuable. Where do people go to vacation? They want to go to exotic places.
They call it paradise.
Right. They call it paradise. Tropical paradise.
Tropical paradise.
They call it a tropical paradise. This is the places where they want to go. But it says, Ephraim shall bring forth his children to the murderer. Who's the murderer? Going into Edom, right? Like the prophecy in Genesis, how he had the murderous spirit from the beginning for Jacob. It says, but he will bring his children to the murderer. Come on. So the ones that are of that seed and are not of the seed of Israel, this is what the Most High wound up doing to diminish their numbers. Come on.
Verse 14. Give them, O Lord, what wilt thou give? Give them a miscarrying womb and dry breath.
So I'm not saying that all of the Spaniard mixing is gone, but the Most High killed a lot of those babies, whether through a miscarriage or he gave them dry breath so that the babies, meaning what? The babies would not survive, even the ones that were born that were not Israelites.
Hey, check this out. Y'all ready? Even the dark-skinned ones in those lands could be Esau.
You're right. We've gone over that when we went through the Castas with the different mixes.
That's right. That's right. So don't – in that foolishness, we brought out scripture upon scripture upon scripture, precept upon precept. If the spirit bears witness with your spirit that you're an Israelite, then you're an Israelite.
That's right.
That's it.
There's no two ways about it, because trust, if you were from the other nations, at some point, and Bishop Nathaniel always said this, they will leave. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
They will leave.
The Bible will pull you away.
Right. Right. The truth will pull you away. You'll get cut. Your spirit will. Give me Hebrews 4:12 to prove that. Your spirit. Notice what I said. Your spirit will get cut, because the spirit, which is the Bible, bear it witness with your spirit that you're the children of God, is what Romans 8:16 says. Give me Hebrews 4:12.
This is the book of Hebrews 4:12. For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword.
It's so quick and powerful that it will reveal who you really are. Go ahead.
Piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit.
Of soul and spirit. So your soul and your spirit will not be upright in this truth. You will get removed. Trust in the Bible.
Right. Hey, and that's precision there. It's letting you know that the scriptures is going to slice and dice you, and you will not be able to endure this if you're not of this. Either you're reserved for everlasting damnation, or you a heathen. Your spirit will not bear witness with this. It says it's sharper than any two-edged sword. That's like beyond a scalpel.
It says, dude, it says it goes to the marrow. The marrow's the stuff inside the bone.
Yep.
That's right.
It says pieces the soul even,
which a soul is deeper than marrow.
Yep. Yep,
that's, come on, man.
Yeah.
Stop. That's the truth.
That's right.
You want the rest, Cap?
Mm-hmm.
And of the joints and marrow.
Oof.
And is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart.
That's what the word of the Most High God does.
Mm-hmm.
It discerns to you, lets you know who you are.
Right. According if you're really about this, or if you're not, if you're going to endure in this, or if you're not.
Right, because that's another way. It's twofold.
Mm-hmm.
It's twofold, because you could be Israel, but you're not chosen.
Yep.
Right, you're Daniel 12, again, going back to you're chosen for everlasting contempt.
Yep, yep, that's right. All right, we're going to go back to the book. Let's go back to that page. All praises to the Most High. So what brought that out was we were reading how it says, much like the Puerto Ricans of the 1950s, Dominicans went largely unnoticed at first. New Yorkers tended to mistake them for blacks who happened to speak Spanish, meaning that many of them were dark. They looked like Judah, or what you would think is Judah. Listen, I've often said this in classes. I've said this on the show before. We have to get out of our heads the stereotypical of what you think a so-called Hispanic looks like.
That's right.
You're going by the way they look today. There are Northern Kingdom Israelites in Africa darker than Eric.
Yeah.
Darker than Bishop Nathaniel.
Darker than night.
Darker. Bishop Nathaniel be mad. He's going to say, damn, you said I'm dark.
He says he's dark.
I know. So, you know, it's like, it's all right if he's saying it.
Yeah, my granddaughter has blonde hair and blue eyes.
Got to remember, once upon a time, remember like we read in Judges, once upon a time, we were all looking very similar. All right. So you got to get the prototypical thing out your mind. All right. Hey, look at Captain Obvious. What do people joke and call him? The Black Rhino.
Right.
Yeah, right. The speckled bird. It goes back into it. Right. So it says they were mistaken for blacks who happen to speak Spanish. By the 1990s, however, they had become the second largest Hispanic group in the Northeast, right behind Puerto Ricans, because Puerto Ricans was the number one for a long time. Dominicans might be more at this point, maybe.
In New York?
Yeah.
I think Issachar, man. Remember, they came in waves. They came in waves.
Issachar was like in the 2000s.
Yeah.
Port Chester and...
You know how
and,
you
and
know? You know what my...
Poughkeepsie.
Yep. Well,
they went upstate.
Right. My gauge was of what was the next Northern Kingdom coming in or Israel by the stores. When you start seeing restaurants and the stores, you start seeing the transition like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I get
it. They cater to those certain groups.
Right. Because they're there.
Right.
Right.
So it says, as mainstream newspaper accounts of Dominicans involved in violent crime or drug trafficking became commonplace, some whites started to react with anger and blame the new immigrants for the city's decline. Ooh, gotta be them. Rarely did the posturate news reports, however, seek to explain why so many Dominicans came to the United States in the first place, which is the case with all the immigration. They want to their presumption is, it's so good over here that's why everybody's coming.
Hey, it's so good over here based on their presumption that they will make rafts and travel over the Atlantic Ocean
just to try to come here.
Right, because
the Cubans in the 80s, right?
Yes, yeah. Because the United States took a shit in all their countries and left it there. They didn't bother to flush. They didn't bother to wipe. They didn't bother to clean it up.
Hey, go ahead.
I'm saying they shit it on their countries.
Yeah. They believe it's so good here that they'll defect when they come here and leave their family behind.
Yes, yes.
That's the witchcraft that Babylon
That's
has.
That's the strong wine. That's that strong wine, that delusion. Hey, that's why it says if it were possible, it would deceive the very elect.
Ain't that some message? Wow.
That strong delusion.
Wow.
That bewitching of naughtiness has them leave all that behind. So they crapped on their home countries, not just DR, but everybody that we've been going over, right? We started with Puerto Rico, and we've moved through different countries so far. And then it drives immigration here. It drives immigration here. So it says, few explored the new immigrants' enormous success in neighborhood commerce or their high enrollment in the public university system. Because what happened was, contrary to popular belief, Ephraim actually did prosper for a time, right? Because we used to think that in comparison to Simeon, that Ephraim never did crap over here when they came here, that they all just came and went on welfare. That's not entirely true. That goes into the posturate news reports pushing that agenda out. Yes, are there a lot that went that way? Yes, Ephraim is jacked up, all right? You from New York, you know any Ephraimites from the New York area, they jacked the hell up. But there's just as many that are successful, that were community leaders, that were successful businessmen, that were upper middle class or middle class workers, all right? Not all are that prototypical that you have there. But when Dominicans came, they kind of learned from that and they took it to another level. We're going to read a little bit about that as well. So while they're talking about all this crime and violence, they failed to highlight how they opened up businesses in the neighborhoods where they were all in. And they provided services to each other. They had high enrollment in public universities, all right? It's going to talk later, if we get to it today, about City College. The enrollment there is highly so-called Dominican in City College. Because why? It's in the heart of where they wound up being pushed to, right? We're probably not going to get to everything today. It'll probably take up half of the next show to wrap up what I want to wrap up with DR. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. If not half, a portion of it. But when we talk about their version of the Young Lords, it wound up pushing them out of those areas where they were in Manhattan and other boroughs and pushed them to northern Manhattan. And then they wound up going into City College. That's where my wife graduated from.
City College, BMCC.
Hostos is another one
in the Bronx. Yep.
So it says, and none of the reports clarified what was distinct about the Dominican diaspora from that of earlier European or even from other Latino immigrants. The Dominican exodus, unlike that of Puerto Ricans and Mexicans, began largely as a refugee flight in the mid-1960s because they just destroyed this 30-year despotic regime where he had this anti-Haitian sentiment there and all these atrocities going on. Much of it followed a popular uprising in April 1965 that sought to restore to power the country's first democratically elected president, Juan Bosch. President Lyndon Johnson, fearing the revolt would lead to a Castro-style revolution, dispatched 26,000 troops to invade the country, talking about the Dominican Republic. And those soldiers sided with the Dominican army in its effort to crush the revolt. All right, so they were trying to get this guy in power, and they said, we got to go in because we don't want Juan Bosch to come back into power, right? We need to fill this vacuum here and make sure that it goes according to plan. We have to take out our own guy. We need to make sure that we see who we're going to put in here. So it says the U.S. occupation then paved the way for Joaquin Balaguer. He was a longtime aide of assassinated dictator Trujillo to capture power during elections that followed in 1966. So they came in under the guise of we don't want a Castro-like revolution and have Juan Bosch take power. So we're going to put basically Trujillo's right-hand man as the next president. They'll probably give him a little talking to. Don't go off the rails like Trujillo did, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So those elections, despite supervision by U.S. and international observers, were plagued by right-wing violence against Bosch supporters. To defuse the post-election crisis, U.S. officials hastily facilitated the mass exodus to the United States of the very revolutionaries our government had helped crush. So they went in and invaded this revolution down, these people from Bosch that were going to trim into power. And then because they wanted to stabilize it for Balaguer, they said, let's let them come here. They said, just let them come here. Wow. So the same people that they helped oppress, and then they said, all right, come here. For the next 30 years, Dominican political life was dominated by the same personalities and unresolved conflicts of the April 1965 revolution. Bloody political repression against Bosch's followers lasted for more than a decade. More than 3,000 were killed between 1966 and 1974 alone. Thousands of others suffered imprisonment and torture. Because of that right-wing repression, those who fled the country in the late 1960s and 1970s were typically from the political left. Washington, however, refused to classify the Dominicans as refugees, as it did the Cubans who were fleeing Fidel Castro at the same time. So Dominicans received no federal assistance on arrival. So this was this pushed them to try to do for themselves. Here's the interesting thing. It goes back to what I'm saying. Trujillo documented in their own historical documents, was probably the worst dictator out of all the dictators in Latin America and in the Western Hemisphere. Yet they classified the Cubans as refugees because, remember what I said about Castro? He wasn't really a socialist. He wasn't really a communist. He just lined up with there to do it. But because it didn't go with the, you know, the cult of personality, the time of being anti-communist. But Trujillo was more communist probably than Castro ever was, based on what we've learned.
I mean, if you look at their definition of communism.
Right, right. So you have these, you know, it goes back to their popular persuasions and all that BS, right? Not until the 1980s, after the Reign of Terror ended back home, did Dominican immigration assume more an economic than a political character. Those Dominicans who came here, whether in the early or later waves, were generally better educated, more urbanized, and more politically active than the average Mexican or Puerto Rican migrant. They also proved more adept at business enterprise, launching thousands of bodegas, well, that's the little corner supermarkets, and consumer goods stores in New York City, just as Cubans were doing in Miami. So Puerto Ricans had some bodegas, but it just blew up to another level. But it would be a bodega on one corner, and you cross the street, and there was another bodega on the other corner.
There was three bodegas on one block on 138th Street. I don't know how – well, I know how they stayed in business, but
– well.
But, yo, they weren't about competition, though.
No, no. They weren't worried about any of that stuff at all.
Nah. Whoever played the better number, whoever had the better number, right. Better odds of winning the bolita.
Manhattan's Washington Heights became their El Barrio, right? So we had ours over there, Spanish Harlem, right, which is largely Ephraim, right? Little Havana down in Miami. So Washington Heights became Little Dominican Republic, all right? The newcomers, though, were largely mulatto and black. So they weren't as light-skinned as the Cubans and Puerto Ricans that came. And they quickly encountered racial discrimination, even from other Hispanics. That's that colorism. And like
Plátano, that's why he said he was Puerto Rican. Yeah.
And I did a colorism show. We did it on a Saturday show.
That was a while back.
It was a while back. Yeah. So we'll probably I don't want to say probably. If it be the Lord's will, we're going to get around to doing a more full colorism show. And that emphasis, I did it more with how you'll see what we just went over with Jose and everything else, with, you know, Southern Kingdom vexing Northern Kingdom. Mm-hmm. But we're going to talk about it even within Northern Kingdom circles as well. Estela Vasquez was one of those Dominican pioneers. I don't really need to talk about her. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. The Lucianos, the early years. For Estela Vasquez Luciano, as for most Dominicans, modern existence began on May 30 of 1961, when El Jefe, the General Rafael Leonidas Trujillo, was assassinated by fellow officers after 31 years of wielding absolute power. President Kennedy and the CIA, the world would later learn, had decided to oust Trujillo, even though previous U.S. governments had groomed and backed him.
All right, so who did they say killed him?
JFK. Kennedy and
No. Who actually pulled the trigger?
His own officers.
Okay, again, going back to, it shouldn't surprise you that we kill each other. Just because they, so what about it? So they're Esau?
Right. No. Exactly. So we can't automatically assume
come
that
on, man, stop.
Right, our people are wicked. So and remember, even though it says here, even though the US government groomed and backed Trujillo, you're their guy till you're not. And then they set this up, and they infiltrated his guys, and they shot him, right? And Balaguer was promised the reign. So remember how we read earlier how they came in to crush Bosch and they paved the way for Balaguer? That was all planned, that it was going to go down that way. So Balaguer was probably complicit in allowing his assassination, right, so that he can come to power. So four turbulent years followed Trujillo's death. During that time, the country staged its first democratic election for president, and Juan Bosch, a populist reformer and intellectual, won the vote in a landslide. But Bosch's attempts at land reform and his refusal to repress the country's communist movement placed him in immediate conflict with the sugar growers and the U.S. government. So here we go. You're considered a communist when you want to do the land reform is going into kicking out the U.S. companies that want to basically get rich off of our resources that we had in these countries. So they had allowed Bosch to basically come into power, and this is what was really the cause of their invasion in 1965 after that, because they said, no, this guy's trying to kick us out. We need a guy in there that's going to be favorable to us, right? All right? Because I just said it here. He put him in immediate conflict with the sugar growers and the U.S. government. Only 7 months after his inauguration, he was overthrown by the army and forced into exile in Puerto Rico. Bosch remained popular even in exile, however, and 2 years after his ouster, on April 24th, 1965, a charismatic young follower of his, Colonel Francisco Camaño, led a revolt of young army officers to restore him to power. From the moment the revolt began, the people of Santo Domingo poured into the streets to reclaim their democracy from the generals. So they talk about Estela Vasquez. I don't need to talk about that. Nope, I don't want to talk about that. He makes it a little story, like, with some of this stuff. Sometimes it's relevant, sometimes it's not. Let me see where I wanted to go. Nope, I don't want that. Nope, I don't want to. Okay, let's go down to not all of Ana Maria's family avoided Trujillo. So zoom in down there, the bottom paragraph. Can you zoom in on the bottom paragraph so they can see? What are you guys, taking a break? Eating your Snickers? What are you doing? That page.
Playing with the soundboard.
There you go, the bottom paragraph, that page. I know.
Hell no.
So, not all of Ana Maria's family avoided the Trujillo terror. Another of her brothers, Juan Mejias, once made the mistake of publicly criticizing El Jefe. He was promptly arrested and thrown naked into La Cuarenta, a notorious prison on the outskirts of the capital. There he was tortured so badly that when he finally emerged, he had been driven insane and had lost all hearing. For the rest of his life, he wandered the streets of the capital, homeless, since no family member dared to give him shelter. So they were afraid. That's how bad Trujillo's reign was. Wow. The absolute power Trujillo wielded is almost unimaginable today. A former U.S. ambassador to the country recalled in his memoirs that telephones were tapped, hotel rooms were wired with microphones, mail was opened, cables scrutinized. Worst of all, as the dictator's secret informers seeped throughout the land, no man could know whether his neighbor or his lifelong friends or even his brother or son or wife might inform against him. Everyone feared, no one trusted anyone, right? So that sentiment there, that's orchestrated. And remember, it said that Trujillo was backed by the United States at one time. So these were tactics ever from when that they did from way back when. So I want to make a point here and just stay with me. Let's get Matthew 24 and 12. Because, yo, your own family won't take you in after you went through all that stuff in the prisons because you're afraid of that. I'm going to make a point here. Stay with me. We're going to read these verses, Matthew 24, 12, and then we'll jump up to 6. Because some people will read this and say, I don't understand how that could be possible, right? My mom, my whatever, they're never going to turn their back on me, right? Come on.
This is the book of Matthew, chapter 24 and verse 12. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold.
And I think a lot of times we glaze over that scripture and we say, gosh, so iniquity will abound, right? He's telling you because sin will abound, that the power of sin is stronger than the power of love. And he's telling you that the sin will abound, so the love of many, meaning your family, like we read here is this example. And remember, I said that that's an orchestrated thing, meaning that's something that Esau is good at. They perfected it, them and those that are confederate with them. And it's not, if they were able to do it here in absence of the Bible, you can only imagine with the Bible. Jump to verse 6.
Verse 6. And ye shall hear of wars
and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet.
That was the climate that they were living in right here under Trujillo, right? So the point that I'm going to start driving home here is that this type of thing creates a certain environment where people that you think would care about you and love you, all right, get susceptible to the fear. They get susceptible to the iniquity that's abound. Easy to break them down. So basically, it's not far-fetched because historically it's been done where our people turn on each other. So going back to what, because Cap was bringing that point out too, when his own officers killed him. We read this and we think that it's, oh man, that's a far ways off. No, stuff like that happens now. Stuff like that happens now. It's not that difficult.
Okay, everybody has a price, man.
Right. Everybody has a price. You just don't know what it is till it's presented to you. Read on.
Verse 7. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places.
Hey, I was reading a story how they were Moab, but just to show you, family, father and son, they went to Hawaii. Hawaii has some of the strictest things. They went there with fake COVID cards, right, like to say they had the vaccine. And they got arrested at the airport, and they're facing, like, time and fines. And the only reason they got found out was because family told on them back home. Pestilences.
That's how, I didn't read that whole story. That's how it was?
Yes. Pestilences. They say it was an anonymous tip.
I thought it was because she spelled Moderna wrong.
No, that was the other lady.
Oh.
That was the other lady. There was another one that she spelled Moderna wrong. Showing you that this type of environment and these type of things will drive people for their love to wax cold. All right? So go ahead. Come on.
Hey, but Cap, you know what? Also, Facebook is doing that now.
Yes. Yes.
If you know anybody who's extra prepared, that's under the guise what they're doing.
Yes. Yes. Wow. They're trying to incentivize you to report people. So like if you think they're in a hate group, if you think they're this, that, or whatever, right? Come on, read.
Verse 8. All these are the beginning of sorrows. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's
sake.
So
my point is this. If a pandemic, a virus, if a dictator in this environment can create that type of thing where family would turn their back on you, when they orchestrate that we are the enemy, which they've already tried to do, and they're starting with their SPLCs, their ADLs, and all the other acronym letter organizations that they got out there, it's not far-fetched to see how easy it is for them to orchestrate that sentiment into people to betray you, right? So that the more when it comes to the Bible is my point. Come on.
You know what's funny, Cap? You'd be surprised. Well, people out here ain't going to be surprised, but maybe first-time viewers. How much people loved you when you were wicked as hell, your family members, and how they really hate you. Now, they hate, brothers and sisters, so hang in there. It's Christ that they hate. They hate the Most High God. All right, but it's just crazy how fervent. You were fine when you were homosexual. You were fine when you were a junkie, right? When you were not in this truth. Now they can't stand you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Come on, man.
And then shall many be offended and shall betray one another and shall hate one another.
Hey, that goes to what you just said. They'll support you when you were in evil. But you could be in and out of jail for being a petty crook, and they'll still have your back. You could be strung out on all types of drugs, and they still got your back, right?
You're trying to clean your life, and they hate you.
Right. No, you basically start keeping these commandments, and they hate you. And it's really that they hate Christ, like what we said before. Right. You could be the architect of your own demise, and they'll make simple statements like, well, he's our family. He's our family.
Yeah, we can't turn our back on him.
We can't turn our back on him. But the minute something like this comes into play,
hey, the minute you freaking start talking about the Edomite on their wall,
mm-hmm. Right? And it says many will be offended, right? Many will be offended, right? Yeah, you can bring that out if you want.
Don't talk about the junkie hanging on the wall.
Go ahead.
Right. This is the book of Matthew, chapter 10, and verse 36. Freedom! And a man's foes shall be they of his own household.
So break it down.
It's telling you that a man's foes or enemies shall be those of his own household. Like when you stop coming by for Easter and Christmas.
Right. They're offended.
Yep.
Like we read in verse 10, Matthew 24:10, many people offended, and then they hate you for it.
You're the enemy of the state.
You the enemy now. You the weirdo. You the freaking weirdo.
Will Smith jumping from.
Right. So it says, if the police were looking for you, we called Dr. Arnulfo Reyes, a survivor of the repression. You dared not run away. If you did, they would come and kill all the members of your family. So people just sat in their houses and waited for the police to come.
Oh, wow.
Estela was still in junior high school when Trujillo was assassinated. At first, along with everyone else in the family, she mourned the death of the only leader most Dominicans had ever known. But those feelings of loss rapidly gave way to outrage as victims of the Trujillo years returned from exile abroad. And the stories those exiles revealed about the tortures they had endured under his depraved rule, stories which were all widely disseminated in the country's revived free press, jolted Dominican society from its 30-year slumber. Soon, students began marching by. Listen, and that's heavy because every dictator that was in power had a following. And I'm not saying Trump was a dictator, but you see how these people were with Trump? It blinds you to any rationale. Hey, and you're seeing it now with Biden. These Biden supporters is the same way. So basically my point is if your man is there, it's not far-fetched to realize how people will basically put on blinders to everything else.
Hey, check it. Check it. I'm sorry.
They let a murderer go over Christ.
Right. Right.
Right.
Right. Just to show you the way their hearts are. That's our people. Mm-hmm. That's our people. That's our people. Nope. Free him. We want, because they were offended.
Right.
They hated Christ because they were offended.
Meanwhile, a week earlier, they loved him when he came in.
Right, right. Well, it goes to show you how it is. But the point that it says that at one time, people were mourning this guy, and then when all the stuff came out of fully what he was doing, they were like, oh, damn, wait a second. So he called it a slumber. Soon, students began marching by the thousands to demand democratic elections and an end to the series of caretaker juntas that kept jockeying to fill the vacuum left by Trujillo's death. Radical newspapers and books proliferated. Leaders of the leftist June 14th movement became instant folk heroes. Estela, like most young Dominicans, was swept up by the political whirlwind. I'm going to jump down. Go down. Yep. Most Americans. Most Americans still recall exactly what they were doing the day they heard the news John Kennedy had been shot. So it is with Dominicans who recall every detail of the afternoon of April 24th, 1965, the day the Dominican Revolution began. Estela Vasquez was sitting in her grandmother's house listening to the radio show of Velvet Voice commentator Francisco Peña Gomez. Every Saturday, Peña Gomez, the youth leader of Juan Bosch's Dominican Revolutionary Party. I said, we always had this. There's always a remnant of our people that had this revolutionary spirit, right? Just the Bible was always missing, right? So this was the PRD. He would host a weekly show. Hey, much like us in Israel have weekly shows that we host, right? And we're in a spiritual warfare. The keeping of the commandments is our revolution, right? That's the real revolution because it's against everything that this earth stands for, right? All the foundations of the earth are out of course. Things are turned upside down. It was called Tribuna Democratica, Democratic Tribune, and it was especially popular among poor, darker-skinned Dominicans who all knew that Peña Gomez was one of the few blacks
I remember that race.
To hold a prominent political post in the country. Listen, so the point is it's inspiring to see your own people doing something, right? And you have to be careful with that, though, because I've often said, what good is somebody that looks like you, right? And it's the trick baby thing. And for all intents and purposes, they're speaking like they're, you know, your oppressors, right?
Like Obama.
Right. Obama was one of them, right? You have Ocasio-Cortez. She's on the fence a little. Sometimes she says some things that's real on point. But, you know, the point is they're up there, right? And Kamala Harris is probably the biggest one, right? Because she's supposedly she's our people. But then you look at her and, you know. But the point is it's so important and it's so empowering for people to see their own people, right, speaking to things and inspiring them to revolution, right? And listen, in this day and age, it's so funny when Biden said it, man. Because he got all these nuts out there talking about, you can't take our guns. It's for us to fight against the government. He said, what are you talking about? He said, To overthrow a government, you need things like tanks and planes and nukes.
some rifles. Right. How you going to government with that stuff? Those days are gone, all right? Ain't nobody overthrowing no governments like that.
No.
And the coups that you see now, they happen with full armies being able to turn against their, right? There was a coup in Guinea, right, just this past week. And they had the whole army. It wasn't the citizens that had guns that rose up and took down the Guinea government.
Yeah, but Guinea government ain't got all that firepower either.
Right. But the point...
got
right.
No tanks or something like
right.
That.
But I find it
took him over with rocks.
Bro, I find it so hilarious when he said that. Yeah. I said, man, that's what we've been saying for you. You got all these knuckleheads thinking they're going to overthrow the government. Listen, you're not fighting against the government. The only thing you could do is make sure that put the salvation and the emphasis on Christ. That's why he has to be the one to come to bring that salvation. But our actions and our training and our boot camp, right, is rehearsing these righteous acts now.
That's right. That's right.
Keeping these commandments now so that that day can come and we can see that, right, and we have that redemption. And along the way, with the keeping of those commandments, is keeping this history and this awareness in people's minds and forefront, especially when it comes to Northern Kingdom. It's that 11th hour, and a lot of people don't notice. There's still a lot of places. You know, Bishop was bringing out at men's conference that the gospel may not get to everybody before Christ returns. Mm-hmm. And he says that. He brought up the scriptures to support that. He says, because a lot of times we read where it says this gospel will be preached in the whole earth and then the end shall come. We're not going to reach every corner of it, right? Meaning the Most High will have mercy on some. This is why it says them that knew will get many stripes and them that didn't will get few. Mm-hmm. There's some that might not get the repentance but are still reserved for salvation.
Right.
Right, when the end comes. But until then, we have to continue to push and push and push and bring this awareness out.
That's right.
We have to continue to make that mark and bring that out. So when I read this example of Peña Gomez, I said, damn, that's Israel and what we're doing now and what we're bringing out to try to bring awareness to the people, right? You got something, Cap? I see you looking.
No, I was just thinking because Peña Gomez, when I was working in Washington Heights, man, that was the big thing, Leonel versus Peña Gomez. And they would joke, hey, my negro que Peña Gomez.
Right, because they called him a black guy.
He was dark.
He was the few blacks to hold a prominent political post. Right.
Yeah.
So going to show you that cake not turn, right? Sometimes you put the pancake on there, it don't come out golden brown, it come out real dark on one side. And then you try to hide it on the other ones if you have guests or you're giving it to somebody.
And if you notice, even when it's brown, it's still a little bit of light in it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right about that. We're going to read a little bit more and then we'll wrap it up. And then, like I said, part of the next show, we'll finish up. I still got a few pages on it. Listeners who tuned in that day were startled when they heard Peña Gomez announced that young officers in the army had launched a rebellion to bring President Bosch back to power. They were led, Peña told his listeners, by Colonel Camaño, son of an infamous Trujillo-era general. Estela rushed with her boyfriend and several of her cousins to Avenida Mela, one of Santo Domingo's big commercial streets. I don't know if I need all that. Hold on. Okay. On the second night of the uprising, military planes began dropping bombs in the downtown area. This was all going on in DR in 1965, man.
Wow.
So the military of the existing government were dropping bombs on the pro-Bosch rebellion, all right, on the downtown area. I don't know if my wife knows this history. I got to ask her about this. They were dropping bombs on there.
I never knew
that. Bro, at the United States' behest. Because remember, they wound up coming in and putting down the rebellion. They sided with the people that dropped bombs on their own citizens in aircraft in cities. In downtown, in response, Bosch supporters led by cadre of the June 14th movement attacked and occupied several police stations. Estela, who was too young to participate in the precinct assaults, carried weapons and ammunition for the rebels instead. On the third morning of the revolt, the Air Force resumed all-out attacks on the Duarte Bridge. More than 50 people were killed and 100 wounded. The Air Force, that means the planes was coming down, just mowing them down. And more than 50 people were killed and 100 wounded, but the Constitutionalists, reinforced by Camaño and his rebel soldiers, managed to hold the critical gateway to the city. After that victory at the bridge, civilian support for the rebels mushroomed. Government soldiers began deserting their posts, and it appeared that the generals were on the verge of surrendering. So they were going to win. But President Johnson and his emissaries were determined not to allow it. On April 28th, Johnson sent in the Marines as U.S. officials leaked exaggerated claims to the press that communists were in control of the rebellion and that American lives were in danger. Trigger words. All right. The White House called the intervention neutral, but federal documents declassified since then leave no doubt that U.S. officials cooperated with and encouraged the ruling junta's effort to stamp out the pro-Bosch forces. Let me get first. This is 572. So it says they leaked exaggerated claims to the press. All right. That's the popular persuasions. Calamities. Go ahead. Read that.
This is the book of First Ezra, chapter 1 and verse 72. But the heathen of the land lying heavy upon the inhabitants of Judea.
So it's a heathen tactic to do this stuff, especially when it comes to our people. Come on.
And holding them straight hindered their building.
Right? Hindered our building. Just like they're trying to hinder our building by calling us a hate group, blocking us out, trying to block us out from the internet. Now, us not having the same type of rights and avenues. You can push all you could push all that nasty crudeness evil that Lil Nas X, who's from the tribe of Judah, by the way, pushing out there. lap dancing the devil.
Wow.
Up in the prison scene with naked dudes. Boy, and I'm mad at hell at that song because that song be coming on when I'm at the gym. I got like the stuff on shuffle. Bro, that song got a crazy beat. And I got to catch myself like 5 seconds into the song. I said, oh, this is that evil song.
I never heard it.
I even forgot the name of it. Bro, the video is just naked Judah dudes dancing in the prison.
They got pictures of the brother pregnant.
Like, you seen them? Yeah, bro. This dude is crazy. I'm messing with y'all, Judah, because you always messing with us. That's what I say. Right away, if you see a Northern Kingdom brother doing something crazy, you're like, damn, Northern Kingdom, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with Judah, little Nas X? Nasty ass.
Come on, man.
Anyway, so... Go ahead, read this.
Verse 73.
Uh-huh.
And by their secret plots and popular persuasions.
And their secret plots and popular persuasions. Notice it said that the White House had called this intervention in DR neutral. But later, after the stuff was declassified, it showed that they cooperated with and encouraged the ruling. The people that they said, all right, that were dropping bombs and everything. They cooperate. Their intent was to encourage it and to stamp out the pro-Bosch forces,
right?
Because they knew that Bosch was about that land reform. Bosch was about kicking them out and taking control of the country and get the U.S. government interests out of there. So popular persuasions, come on.
And commotions.
And commotions. That means they'll set all these proxy wars. They'll encourage the guerrillas, right? They'll come in and do these type of invasions when things get real hot. All of that. And they justify those actions with those popular persuasions. But behind the scenes, they have a secret agenda, secret plots. Come on.
They hindered the finishing of the building all the time that King Cyrus lived.
Right. So they're always trying to come at us. In this case, it was political. It wasn't based on them trying to stop the truth there. But to show you that's just in their spirit when it comes to us. All right. So it says, Camaño's rebels, several thousand strong, retreated to the heart of the capital, where they were soon contained inside 54 square blocks of the colonial city known as Ciudad Nueva. There, cut off from the rest of the Dominican people by a U.S. enforced security corridor, the rebels remained in control of the nerve center of the country. The presidential palace, the ports, the telephone company, the main post office, and the radio and television stations. In that rebel area, Estella lived for a month until a patrol of soldiers arrested her one afternoon. So it just goes on to talk about her a little bit. And there was, let me see what else I want here. And then we're going to stop it there. That was it. It gets a little personal into her story. So basically they had her. I'll just sum it up. They had her and they arrested her, this young lady that was for the pro-Bosch thing. And they didn't want to let her go because they said she was going to go back and help the revolution. So her mom's, I don't know if it was her mom's or her aunt, had come back from New York, and she pleaded with them to let her go. So they let her go, but they deported her. They sent her straight to the airport, and, like, she couldn't go back until things changed over there. But the point is, I don't think many of us understood or saw or knew that level of unrest that was going on in the Dominican Republic. And, again, the reason why it's so relevant is you got to see that all of this stuff was driven. Look, the cover of the book has an American flag on it, right? It has so-called a little Northern Kingdom girl on there, so-called Latina girl. But letting you know that America's intervention in there is what drives a lot of the issues that they complain about today. And all of it stems from the curses. All of it stems from the Most High setting up these conditions. And it's prime for us to talk about these things because that opens up the doors for people to be more receptive to the repentance that comes in the Bible, for them to see who that enemy is, who that man of sin is, and to see that we are those chosen, all right? That we are the ones that are the elect, all right, are his servants that the Bible speaks about. But we got to keep doing his will and keep bringing this stuff out.
That's right.
I got more pages. We'll bring that out next week. It won't take up the whole show. I'm not sure who we're going to move on to next. I got to see what's up with the documentary and go from there. But we'll probably more than likely continue with this vein of topics as far as this goes to continue to bring this out. But we still got more countries to hit. So I don't know who's next. We'll see. But we'll finish up DR, Lord's Will, on Wednesday coming up. Don't forget the Saturday show, all right? We got from 11 a.m. Arizona time, all right? Power Hour, that's exclusively on Facebook, all right? So you got to make sure that you like the Facebook page. Cap us on before the show. There's a lot of people still haven't liked the Facebook page.
Yeah, I had to send out invites today.
Yeah, you got
to
get on that Power Hour page, all right? If you got some invites from Captain Aparium, accept the invites, all right? I know everybody's always talking about, yeah, support the show. We got to do it with the – get the people to like the page, get people to share the content, all right, so that we can continue to get exposure with that. Any closing thoughts?
Nah, man.
No? All right.
No, sir.
Anything? No? All
stay in the spirit.
Yeah, stay in the spirit. Stay in the spirit, y'all. All right. Study, pray, apply.
That's right.
All right. And with that, we say shalom.
Shalom. Shalom.
Lego. Israel is back.
We back.
Israel is back.
We
got
back.
The nations running scared because Israel is back.
Oh,
all lies on us.
Oh,
right,
praise. That's what we need to do.
Babylon. We got them on lock.